Jones, he married Mabel, a wise old owl was he. He told his wife he never drank a stronger thing than tea. But after honeymooning, at night he stayed away. And for a week he never got home till the break of day. At last poor Mabel asked the reason why. Said Jones, I'm going to tell the truth or die. Baby dear,
hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fiam, joined once again with my co-host Weird. Say hello, Weird.
Hey now, caller, that level of informality is uncalled for. This is your MC Master of Ceremonies, Weirdington! Here to be your master of ceremonies rather than DJ, doing an impersonation of Wolfman Jack! Here to host you on this once-in-a-lifetime razzle-dazzle hell experience! Welcome to Thunderhead 2020!
Thunderhead!
Get ready for misery, folks. It's gonna be a weep riot.
Man, if I didn't know we weren't gonna get sued, I would definitely be playing Pomp and Circumstance right now.
No, listen here. Listen here, Macho Maniac. That impressionation is up here in the throat. Higher, higher. Ever higher. Actually, I can't do it. I'm trapped in a limbo state between Wolfman Jack and Let's see. No. Okay. Macho Maniac. Yeah, here it is. Yeah, way up here in the throat, rather than down here where Wolfman Jack lives.
The two genders, Wolfman Jack and Macho Man Randy Savage. Hello, folks. Hi, that was a really high energy opening for an episode. I'm real excited to ruin this for us all.
A recap for last episode. We got to Thunderhead.
We flew.
That's it.
Christ.
Full play to Thunderhead.
I don't even remember if anything else happened. They
met a Nazi general who I think was a tone setter for how fucked things are gonna be and how they're presented going forward. And that is basically all I can remember.
Also, Lancer was there and now he's not anymore.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of really
zebra
fucked
mythology. Really complicated zebra mythology that I have thankfully spared you most of.
Oh yeah, space is the place. I'm still stuck.
pretty stuck on Macho. Got the Macho setting. Oh boy, I guess we should just jump super right into this one then.
Also, I peaked a lot in spite of going out of my way to not face directly into the microphone.
Yeah, I think the acoustics of the room you record in isn't perfect for trying to do that. You got to be really far away from the microphone. For stuff like that. Anywho.
Enough stalling.
Yeah, enough stalling.
We must face our doom.
Chapter 60, Civilization. I'll stay right here. I titled this one the Fascist Confederacy Utopia episode. I had a lot of ways that I wanted to open this one up, and I wasn't sure exactly how. And I figured the story itself would do a lot of the heavy lifting to this intro. I'm going to read a couple of passages from the beginning of this literally the second to fourth paragraph, I guess, just to really set what this place looks like and feels like, and then we'll go from there. The city was built on the inside of a massive hollow horizontal torus of cloud, like an empty wagon tire lying outside. I saw it as the floor edged up into the city from below, that the bottom lip of the tire extended inwards towards the center farther than the top, creating a sunlit ledge that supported actual living parks. Well, if they could figure out how to make crops grow in clouds, why not grass and flowers? Large, impressive buildings were built into the thick, circumferential wall of Taurus, and they were decorated with Corinthian columns. friezes of pegasi, griffins in combat, and grand statues that appeared to be marble. Along the ceiling of that hollow tube, hung down like icicles, were hundreds of plain, cloud-hewn apartments where, from what Glory told me, the poorer folk lived. Equidistant around the city were six immense buildings that ran up like pillars from the lip of the upper rim to the border of the park ring below. These, according to Glory, were the houses of the Thunderhead's government. I'd been worried about how we were going to sneak into the city. I'd imagine this city as a place like Ten Pony, or even the Society, a building, a cluster of buildings, or even a stable, which had crossed my mind. Places with big, guarded doors where everything going in and out was looked at carefully and judged. Here, there are so many ponies coming and going, entering had been as simple as moving up over the top rim. There are flights of powered armored ponies flying around, but they seem preoccupied with something else. The only interference we had was as a gray pegasi pony with a stubbly chin flew over, expected the cloud, and told Boomer to get that good heavy cloud onto the worksite pronto. And then he flew on, because those were there were other ponies doing similar things. This is how the world was supposed to be. How it once was. Ponies working, living, laughing. It was like a soap bubble that had persisted for 200 years, protected by its mighty tower and advantages over its neighbors. They weren't ponies scrabbling for their next meal, warning about monsters, or trying to keep from being robbed, raped, or ripped in two. Oh, oh. Isn't that a tone setter, folks?
It's the shining city on a hill.
It's Columbia. It's the white city. Oh boy. I really So we're off to a great start here. The thing that really, really stuck with me is this is the way things are supposed to be, which is a picturesque hallmark card of paradise, a literal heaven of which no else can touch. What the fuck is this doing in this story?
Noted scholar and philosopher, Matt Crisman of the El Chapo University has pointed out, fascism has a Janus face, and it presents more heavily, one side or the other, in given people in different given circumstances, but one side is performative cruelty, and the other side is performative saccharin. I've forgotten the name of the artist, but those peachy keen 1950s
Norman Rockwell,
Every Town America. Norman Rockwell is the other face of sort of fascist propaganda. Through performative cruelty, through the eradication of all others, we can eventually get to this candy-coated, peachy cane Reagan ideal.
Yeah, the row houses of suburbia, white picket fences. Everyone looks the same. Everyone's smiling and shining.
Never mind that brick row houses were a socialist project.
But the thing that really stuck in, there's a couple of things that really stuck in my craw about this, but one of the things that really stuck out to me, though, is that despite this having a paradise, this being a paradise, it still has, rampant poverty, apparently?
Well, of course. you can't build a society without losers. Somebody has to lose. But they're apparently fine with it, because they live in a world untainted by others. This picture really does put into focus something that you pointed out episodes and episodes ago, books ago, which is that Somber and a lot of people who think like him regard pegasi as just relentlessly superior, just have are just innately objectively the best.
Yes, it probably doesn't hurt that in the original show, pegasi, or as my autocorrect always makes me want to say Pegasi. it comes from the text to speech, but Pegasi are all heavily Roman coded, so they to a Chud, the pegasi are the closest to the ideal Western civilization in the first place. So it doesn't hurt that they are like that, so it's easy to think of them as like a superior race anyways. I mean, after all, they can fly. They can stand among the clouds. None of the other pony races can claim that.
Pretty funny, in light of yes, this perfect preserved isolated bubble. By virtue of its stark independence, its national isolationism.
Yes.
It has been preserved from the harrows of the world below. And yet it is also this also intentionally forgets that it is parasitizing the world below.
It's doing this by keeping the cloud wall up so that it can grow crops on it.
And also, like, for some reason they're perfectly fine, and in fact the ideal perfect preserved utopia, they do need to harvest technology and resources from the world below. Funny that. It's so Ghostbusters. It's once again the Chuds telling on themselves that, like, they can't help but, like, they know in their hearts, deep down, like, that like the surface level, the forebrain believes the propaganda. But the hindbrain, like, betrays them in their art, in that they know deep in their fetid souls that this is all due to imperialism. Like, that the poorest among them can, like, live in reasonable comfort in this hierarchical, cruel pyramid, because the bottom of this pyramid rests on top of a larger one.
Yes, precariously. Oh man. Okay, so I also can't remember where this statistic comes from, but I want to talk about it now. Friend of the podcast elucidated me on the absolute fucking mind-boggling statistic that we're given here. So I can't remember if this is just Thunderhead specifically, or it's the Enclave full. Would you like to hazard a guess what the population number is that I was given? Like, how big do you think the Enclave or just Thunderhead is in terms of numbers, given this is an apocalypse where a dozen people is a big settlement?
I'll give you two answers. The answer that, like, seems almost believable to me, and the answer that I almost expect I kind of expect Saber would give you. I would hazard 10,000.
Okay.
I would guess that the number Sombra would give would be a million.
So you're closer with your first guess, but even still, either the Enclave or Thunderhead is 50,000 people strong. I want to take that into account. I want to talk about that number because of how mind-bogglingly stupid that line is. That is a statistic completely out of Sombra's ass, and we, like, that has to be the case. Because if that's the case, that means nothing that has ever happened in this story has ever mattered. Think about the Hoof. Think about the Hoofington. Like, think about how big Hoofington is. Think about how big the Reapers are. The Reapers are considered the biggest, baddest raiding group in the Hoof. They are king shit. Even though they're a paper tiger, just ignore that for now. The way that they're booked is king shit of Murder Mountain. That's 100 people. There are 50,000 Enclave Pegasi. That is not even remotely a drop in the bucket. This story, like, it completely invalidated everything that has ever happened in, not only in this story, but, like, impressively every story that has ever happened by uttering this ridiculous number. Because every single struggle, every single dirt town, every single, even big towns, like Friendship City is one of the biggest towns in the entire setting, and that's still only like a couple hundred people. This statistic is bonkers. It is an absolute fabricated nonsense number. It's like both me and Friendo the podcast, who will remain unnamed, just lost our minds over this number because it's absurd. Like, it's just an absurd number to paint the Pegasi as. There's no way that there's this many surviving in the waste. There just isn't. It isn't.
Oh, I mean, they have been isolated in Sky Rapture this entire time.
But they just don't have...
200 years with dwindling resources, like, it is kind of, yeah.
It does stretch
credulity that, like, they haven't had a lot of riots and haven't, like...
So, another thing that sticks in it is that they also don't have a lot of food, because an important thing is that cloud seeding does not produce particularly large quantities of food. That's why they had to close up the whole... Like, the closing of the sky is for twofold. A, it's to keep outsiders and surfacers out. But B, it's because they need miles and miles and miles and miles of square acres just to grow an infinitesimal amount of food, because the yield is so little and so, like, poor nutrition in the first place. So
yeah, this is a desperate island nation, so I can't, like... Also, I don't know, like, I'd have to, like... What is the average population of a military base? Because this is fundamentally a like... military outpost with family, like, bunks.
It's can't be more than a couple thousand people at the very most, and that's still pushing into my mind.
Well, I was thinking, like, the upper limit I was thinking was like 10,000, because I could kind of imagine that, and it would still, that kind of population would still not be able to, like, meaningfully besiege the surface, because, like, 10% of that would be military, and of roughly half of that would have to be, like, would be required to, like, maintain order.
Yeah, I can say with certainty, with the things I know about the setting, there is no way the Enclave is 10,000 ponies strong. There is just simply no way. They don't have the food. They don't have the food to feed that number of people. No one does.
But also, this is an incredibly precarious, like, this is an isolated. This is fundamentally an island nation. It is an island nation controlled by a junta. I think the funniest thing about this is the idea that this, like, incredibly, like, harsh, fascistic military regime could have remained stable for 200 years. And idealistically stable, perfectly stable. Like, here's a fun fact about hierarchical systems. They demand expansionism. They can't function without endless expansion.
Well, in the original story, to nip that a little bit, the original story, they are in a forever war because they invaded their neighbors. They wiped out the Griffins. Like, they are in a forever war, which is how they've been keeping
good on you, K-Cat. That's, yeah. That's how it'd have to be.
Like, yeah.
Mainly because, like, extremely hierarchical systems have to maintain sort of perpetual war and perpetual expansionism, if for no other reason than the existence of second and third sons. If a super pyramidal top down structure doesn't remain forever at war and forever trying to expand its borders, then it will inevitably turn on itself and devour itself. In perpetual civil wars of succession. But Somber doesn't know that. doesn't recognize that. Doesn't understand that. Refuses to think about it.
Yeah, that would require, like, having a brain that isn't entirely smooth. Ooh, man, we have gotten four paragraphs into this, but I knew that was going to happen. But yeah, that number just really stuck out to me. Comical. Like, it's even if it was realistic, even if you're like, okay, it's a realistic military isolationist junta, so of course they have a super large population. Invalidates the entire setting. Like, it's bad writing regardless of its logistics, because it makes everything else in the setting seem like small peanuts. Like, not even just the shit that it normally does, like Fall of Equestria. Its own setting is small peanuts. Like, the fucking giant battle between, like, all of the Reapers and all of the forces they could muster versus all of the Steel Rangers would be like maybe 1,000 people all together. And this is 50,000! Like, it's...
In fairness to Somber, there is an infinite number of Raiders. I've never had a clear picture of how many Reapers there are. Like, are these, like, big epic affairs where, like, life is cheap and there's always, like, another army to go. Like, it keeps describing things that, like, kind of require, like, large population centers. The idea that the Megamart is this huge trading hub. The, like, the ability for the Steel Rangers to mobilize stuff. All the big epic set pieces are always painted as featuring a cast of thousands.
I mean, they're not, but yeah, it's still a relatively low number of people. It's just that, like, I think you're imagining that there's a lot more people in the room than there are whenever I'm describing these, but like, it's still like under 100 people in every situation.
Yeah. Well, yes. All the same, I think Sombra's forgotten that, it is still true that, like, there's an unlimited number of harbingers and raiders. The number of gangs is, like, there's exactly 100 Reapers, but the number of gangs that are supposedly, like, herded by them is unknown.
Yeah, I could also make the opposite counterpoint, though, that, like, the only way that the 100 Reapers could possibly be effective is if, like, the gangs were intentionally kept relatively small so that the 100 could, like, manage them correctly. So there's, like, I don't think there's any way that the numbers...
But Sombra actually thinks in pyramids, so...
No, of course not. I know. But even then, even the pyramids can't that be that big. Like, even if every gang, I don't know, five times the number of Reapers, so they each gang had at least 50 people in it, because all the gangs are really small. Like, we know this from a gang show. Even if you have 50 people, there's like five gangs of people. That is still less than 1,000
yeah.
people. Like, even in these extremely like reasonable numbers, it's literally a difference of magnitude that Sombra has introduced in this that is absurd. Like no joke. If you compiled probably all the populations of every Fall of Equestria story that has ever been written, it would still not be enough to fill the fucking ball pit Sombra has just envisioned the Enclave is.
But yeah, so that well and harped on.
Let's actually get into the chapter now, I guess.
Next, yeah.
A lot of boring shit happens. There's a whole thing where they're not sure like how they're going to be getting able to get around. They use a magic spell that Blackjack picks up that just allows them to cloud walk. So that gets rid of that whole thing. There's a lot of them touring around, seeing how fucking cool and awesome the fascist utopia of Neo Columbia is. And it's really disgusting and unpleasant for me personally. They go to Glory's estate, which I didn't even, like, think about. Like, this chapter found new and interesting ways to make me hate Glory. But the fact that it's revealed that Glory is also, like, uber rich, like, that's always been implied because her father is basically a senator. But even still, like, it's absurd to hear, like, oh yeah, also I'm super rich and we have servants. So maybe that's why she didn't care so much about the serfs in the society, now that I think about it. It's just like my butler Jeeves over here.
Well, yes, that is their place.
God, it was really jarring to read this. It's just like, what, where are we right now? What's going on? They meet Glory's incredibly fashy, shitty other sister. Because we at some point we found out, but like this is reiterated that Glory has four other sisters. Dusk, the one that we've met the whole time, she's here with us now, and Lucid. Moonshadow, her younger sister, who's really uppity and like a weird pencil pushing fash, who like doesn't really give a shit about all of the shit that they're saying. Like, basically they're like, hey, the apocalypse is coming and knocking at their door, and she's like, well, I don't care, the government will fix it. Like, she is the liberal Hillary voter as a person. She's just like, oh well, whatever, it's fine, it'll just get fixed by the government. There's no way Navarro would attack us. That would be ridiculous. It's very much the, like, people don't commit crimes, those are illegal kind of sentiment from this character, and I don't like her even... I didn't realize that I could like a sibling of Glory less than I like Glory, but here we are. And she has two younger sisters that are watching television, because apparently this fascist utopia is so, like, perfect, they still have television that isn't just fascist propaganda 24/7.
The surface ponies are coming to kill you.
Yes.
Are you a ration hoarder? You're helping the surface.
You're helping the dirt ponies. But yeah, she's also like bitchy because Glory bailed just like their mother, and she's all upset about that. But like, they don't really have a plan, as it's sort of revealed again, what they're actually going to do once they get there. They're like, okay, how do we actually like talk to the authorities about the fact that Navarro's coming and also Thunderhead has nukes? And their best plan is basically like, Moonshadow, I guess, will help us because she's like some sort of high up. She's some secretary to some official that she can get in contact with, kind of thing. I don't remember this part super well because it's really uninteresting. This story is so bad about just like ruining any potential tension because they just sit on their hooves again for this entire chapter. Like they just pal around in Nazi town for a while because it's like because apparently there's no like mounting action of any kind.
Yes. How do they cover for the fact that
Glory is Rainbow Dash now?
Glory is both Trotsky and branded. like yes. she has a bleached tramp stamp and is the face of historical Public Enemy number one.
They get around that by just so Lancer had a stealth technology cloak with him. And he left it with them, so she just like wears that all the time. And it's really okay. So this is another one of those things that's really frustrating about this particular chapter. It really feels like I remember reading this the first time, and I was like, oh, this might be cool. This might be a time for Glory to get an interesting spotlight. Like, there's the whole like setup of like, oh, she's Rainbow Dash, so anything could go wrong at the time, and like, you know, this is her hometown. This might be actually like a time for her to do anything. And then like, she basically like immediately passes the ball back to Blackjack when it's like, Blackjack's like, well, you know the area, like you can sort of field this one. And she's like, I'm no leader. I don't have the like leader qualities that Blackjack has. I don't have the main character tag. I can't make any decisions of my own. So she just like gets fridged again, as she always does.
Sumber can't even write. Like, the video game excuse isn't even here for it, because, like, post-Mass Effect, like, most single-player RPGs have at least, like, loyalty quests, which this would be. Like, this is the companion highlight mission. Like, yes. How devoted are you to making your Sue the center of all narrative, are you, that you can't allow anybody?
It's honestly not even that. It's just this is how much he hates Glory. This is how much he doesn't like Glory as a character. She just gets fridged at every opportune. But yeah, and the Rainbow Dash thing doesn't really come up at all in this chapter, given that she's like, she either spends her entire time cloaked or she's with people who are like trusted family friends that would just immediately know who she is and not like rat her the moment that it happens.
Are the rest of the crew wearing fake wings?
No, they're wearing fake horns because I don't know if I ever explained this very well, but Thunderhead's unique thing that it has going on, and part of it's why it's a paradise, is that they have a population of unicorns that live there as well. So there are unicorns who regularly wander the streets of Thunderhead. So they're which might be a problem for 21 and Scotch, given that they're both Earth ponies, but their solution is they just glue horns to their heads and nobody notices. They just like, they literally glue horns from a toy playset, which I think would be really obvious. Like I don't know about you, but if someone had like a very obviously plastic horn on their head, even if it was the same color of the rest of their body, I feel like I would notice that. It's just really sucking all the drama out of the potential of this scene. There is one thing that I thought was kind of funny that we sort of overlooked because I was yelling about numbers. But when they do the cloud walking spell, they're like not sure if it works. So of course Rampage tests it, which I thought was like one of the few times I thought her character, like, it's like, oh yeah, this is the Rampage I like again. She just
I can't
jumped.
Remember the last time I fell from this high. Don't.
Yeah, basically. Well, it's the Looney Tunes response of like, well, what's it gonna do? Kill me? which I thought was pretty fun.
Yay. Sombra hasn't drained the like this.
Fuck. Yeah. So they go to bed, which is really exciting for this late story chapter. BJ has a stupid fucking dream where she like dreams herself up as like a pre-war pony and like for some reason imagines Boo, their basically pet pony dog, as her like younger sister who can talk. And I do not know if this like I saw this dream and I'm like I don't know if this is anything, and I really really hope it's not anything. Like I have never hoped so much that a dream is just a dream in a story before, because I don't know what the fuck this would even be. Like,
please don't let this be relevant. Please never come up again.
Please, I beg of you. I have a family. Oh, Christ, God damn it.
Man, the story is so bad that we're at the point of begging this. For it to waste our time.
God, I forgot about this. So in the next scene, she meets Batman.
Batman?
Batman.
Batman.
So she wakes up in the middle of the night because she senses a disturbance in the force or something. And she notices like a glimmering silhouette that realizes it's like a figure hiding in the shadows.
Whatever you're gonna say next, I hope it's literally Batman. I hope it is a human being, like a fully anthropomorphic bipedal human in a bat costume.
God, wouldn't that be something? No. Instead, we get a weird, mysterious, grumbly voice that sounds vaguely synthetic, coming from a like. Basically, the best way to describe the way they look like is they look like the shadow, like big hat, very obscured, cloaky outfit. They're supposed to be kind of like the mysterious stranger from Fallout. It's a character from the original story known as the Mysterious Meridwell, which is a really complicated, dumb episode thing. But she's in this as well, I guess, and she's basically like, you don't need to come to this city. It's everything's happening is being handled. I can deal with it. You don't need to be here. You can leave and deal with your own problems. And Blackjack's like, nah, I'm just gonna stay anyways. And she's like, fine, it's your funeral. Things are happening that you don't understand. But like, I just really want to take a second and talk about how silly and amazing and stupid and terrible this scene is, and that like a reference to a late series episode in which Rainbow Dash is being a jerk and being a showboat, so all of her friends decide to gaslight her by dressing up as a superhero that she can never quite catch, because of course it's all of her friends playing it, so they can always just like baton pass to the other person. And it being introduced into the story as a very serious Batman analog is really like fucking comical to me in the first place. But it's not even just Batman. It's like the Terry McGinnis Batman Beyond Batman, because it's like clearly like a mechanized suit, like in the future one. So we have gone very off the rails from the sort of like original apocalyptic fiction. Like, it's one of those things, really take a step back and think about, but like, we are now in a weird utopic white city on the hill where Batman is there having a conversation with our main character. Like, remember this story was originally about a main character who was like jumped out of her stable, like sacrificed herself to like save it from an alien, like an unknown threat, and was given a bullshit magic key that could open any lock. Like, remember that happened? Like, remember how that was the beginning of this story, and now we're here in this just fucking nonsense wonderland.
I remember when the stakes were like they bitten by radioactive gators,
and Blackjack was at risk of shitting herself to death because of it. But yeah, everybody wakes up and they all like talk about it, and basically like they do the typical superhero thing of like, psh, the mysterious Meridwell is a myth. They've been dead for 200 years. There's no way they could be alive now. The only thing that really twisted the knife in me though is that they use the term transvestite to describe one of the person, like one of the potential identities of one of the characters that it could have been But, like, somber, that's, like, not an okay word to use, my guy. Like, that's, like, it's 2010s. It's time to grow up and stop using, like, sort of vaguely offensive terminology for your shit. Just let you know from, like an actual queer person to a supposed queer ally, just letting you know that, like, probably shouldn't call people transvestites, even if it's your, like, weird, nonsensical Nazis. Like, just, like...
Actually, I remember you, like, posting this in the run-up and yesterday, and wealthy transvestite recluse. I think the full context, really, just the word alone, I think there's a possibility to, like, write that off as, like, there's better language you could use, but this is clearly, like, is meant as a demeaning term. Like, it meant as, like, there is a negative connotation in its use here.
Yeah.
Which is the real great allyship there, fucking, you fucker.
Yeah.
Great allyship.
Fucking asshole.
Congrats.
You are the winner. Yeah, we were making a joke on the Discord that he's trying to complete the set by insulting every member of the LGBTQ+ one at a time. Their plan basically boils down to disguises again. Yay! They're just going to disguise themselves as a...
We're back to the old standards once more. Like, it's really been a long time, it feels like.
Admittedly, though, disguises have never failed. They have never failed in this story. They always work every single time. It's actually absurd how they...
No matter how implausible, no matter how...
They have a 100% disguise rate, meaning that it's perfect. It's a perfect strategy every time. But yeah, they're gonna go in as a unicorn like detail because, like, unicorns need to, like, use their magic to maintain the city.
When you stirred slightly on detail, I they're going to go in as a unicorn, is what I heard.
It's just like a big Trojan horse. That's just a big...
It's gonna be one of those parade lion dragons, like Chinese lion dragons, but a single unicorn.
That's good. Okay, headcanon accepted. They're a giant parade lion right now. Oh man, we get a lot more reinforcement of how radical and awesome the paradise is, and of Thunderhead, and how everyone would love to live here. There is very much a thing that's left on the table
because it is pure.
Well, that's a thing, is like there is if this was written by, like, me per se, there'd be a big emphasis of, like, yeah, sure does look like a paradise. That's because they're exploiting resources from everybody literally beneath them to do so. So of course it's paradise. It's kept that way on purpose. So no one ever wants to leave. God, because they have military people talking with her, there's more discussion in the military. And we get more of that, like, bad actor theory. That, like, oh, well, even the military is mostly just cool dudes who just want to go through and do, like, the military because it's, like, a big honorable thing. You only get, like, people every once in a while who are, like, career military people who are psychopaths who want to, like, blow places up and take control of Raptors and do bad things. And it's, like, somber. You kind of accidentally hit on the problems with the chain of command, is that the people who, like, want to seek further employment in the military tend to be psychopaths. But it's left on the table as if, like, well, the Enclave isn't that bad. It's just really just a couple of bad actors that...
Just all the careers who have the, like, stamina to reach the highest levels of leadership. A leadership that is totally unquestionable.
Yes.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, the system's fine. It just has a few bad apples, all of which rise to the top.
Yeah, well, it's like, that's one of the things that always really sticks out to me about bad apple theory. It's like, do you know why there's a reason why we say, like, the phrase, one bad apple spoils the bunch? Because that's what happens. You put a bad apple in a bushel of apples, it will rot the rest of the apples in the bushel. That's why you can't have even one bad apple. How do you not get that? Like, how did you, like, stop at, like, the first half of the like, the colloquialism?
Boring truism. Yeah, the colloquialism.
you read half a sentence and went, I'm done. Time to build my ethics off of this. Christ.
You know what they say, a jack of all trades.
Yep, the end. Anywho. Okay, here's some bad fun. I enjoy it. So they've got TV screens, because of course they do, and a bunch of propaganda plays, and it just, like, it's generic propaganda, which would bite a bit more if the story wasn't just, like, if we weren't in where we were, because it's like, oh, we all have to, like, do our part and remind everyone the surface is evil and bad and poisoned, and we can't go there, or everyone will try to kill us. But, like, we're sitting in paradise. Like, that's always, like, the ironic, like, the way, like, ironic propaganda works is you have, like, the speakers talk about how evil everywhere is, but you're standing in squalor. Like, that's how the irony works, Somber. If you write your propaganda about how everywhere else is really bad and safe and we all have to stay in our isolated bubble, but your isolated bubble is paradise, it reinforces the propaganda. Absolute.
It turns out to be right and true in the context you're presenting it.
Yes, you absolute moron. And then there's...
Actually, I don't know that he's a moron. I have not, unless the text specifically calls it out as fear mongering. Then it's Somber might just believe it. Like, might just believe this is a very true and important PSA by the very trustworthy and righteous enclave government.
I remain unconvinced. But then, like, some anime starts playing, which is a real tone shift. So Blackjack finds it.
At my balcony again. All right, some anime starts playing. Hit me.
All right, the Fantasy Channel comes up, and, like, starting next week is some new show that, like, they watch it for a bit, and it's clearly, like, a cartoon show or, like, an anime show of Blackjack's life, and also, like, it's been weirdly mushed together with Little Pip as well, but it's, like, this really weirdly sensationalized version of it that's very silly. And Blackjack's like, huh, that's really weird. I think the only good detail of the whole thing is the fact that Best Boy Anarcho Cowboy Calamity in the cartoon is depicted as, like, a really hot, like, brooding bishy guy, and I think that's really funny to me. It's just, like, the, like, expectation reality joke of, like, it's like anime hot boy, and then, like, real life he's just like,
it's Avatar. It's the play episode of Avatar.
Yes.
Why? all right.
Right.
Can we move on after I pointed out that it's really, really funny and dumb to imagine, even under the best circumstances, this place having more than one channel?
Yes.
The actual literal historical Nazis made sure there was a radio in every home, but the radios were built such that they could only pick up one frequency.
Yes. Radio free Nazi every day. Yeah, wait till we get to the TV studio in a little bit. I told you I saved the whammies. Christ. So there is admittedly a bit of fun that actually happens that I enjoy, where they get caught because something happens. Like Black, like I remember what it is. Glory's under, like, under her cape, her invisibility cape, and somebody, like, bumps into her invisibly, and then, like, it's like, holy shit. It's Trotsky in my diner, and they all freak out. And there is an admittedly a kind of fun moment where, like, they're like, oh, we need to get out of here. We need to go. Okay, do we do the front accent, like front door or the back door? And it's important to remember that everything in Thunderhead is made of clouds because they can structure clouds. So Rampage just goes through the wall Because she's like, it's a cloud! What are you doing? And it's moments like this that really makes me wish like this was the story more often.
Yeah.
Slapstick idiots befuddling society. Sorry.
I feel bad because I'm about to nitpick the only good thing that's happened for the last 50 minutes of reading. But I think the ideal like setup for that joke would be like Rampage like just throws herself Kool-Aid Man style through a cloud and says, "It's a cloud!" And then everybody else points out, "Yeah, but we're enchanted so that it's as hard as stone, you idiot!"
That's a good point. That would have been much funnier.
Ugh. So it's layered. That's how a good joke should work.
Like an onion.
Anyway.
Fuck. So, but of course, because this is always what happens, this is an excuse, not really for a chase to happen, but for Blackjack to split up from the rest of the crew so that she can like divert most of the people. So she's losing the whole party again. 21 has left your party. Rampage has left your party. Glory has left your party. Just a bunch of those tags. She gets chased around a while. It's very stupid. She seems like she's cornered when, like, I called him Walt Disney horse, and it'll make sense in a second. But he shows up, and he's like, he plays off all of Blackjack's nonsense as like, she's not a surface dissident. She's an actor I paid, you see, because I'm chicanery. I run the TV studio, and this was a little publicity stunt for the new show coming out. And then he's just like, play along, kid, and I'm gonna get you out of here.
Man, is he gonna look bad when Rampage falls back on her sitter killing? especially in this like circumstance where it is literally a massive wealthy suburb is now a slasher monster is loose.
Yeah. But we follow Blackjack. She gets shown Chicanery, which is just a hell of a name for a TV horse. I'll give Somber that. Gets shown around the TV studio. He's very cordial and friendly. And BJ's like, how do you have like my life in a cartoon? And he's like, it's because I got this stupid thing. And he's got like a pep buck on, and he shows off that like he's got some device called the Perceptotron, which is basically a remote viewing device that allows him to watch anybody with a pip buck, but it doesn't work for very long without overheating, so he's been like watching snippets of like little Pip's adventures and Blackjacks and stuff, and been cobbling a story out of that, and that's what he's been selling as his new cartoon. But like the reason why like even I'm even bringing this up is it's plot relevant, but also be like, we made a joke about this like months ago about the idea that there's just a bunch of like enclavers that just have to sit there and like watch every fucking thing that Blackjack does.
Blackjack on the toilet, Blackjack hearing out from slave owning aristocrats, Blackjack raping her best friend.
Yep, all the classics. Oh, fuck. She puts on the Perceptotron to remote view. And we get the memory orb like thing.
Yeah.
So now we're getting memory orbs, but memory orbs in real time.
Memory nows.
they're current moments. And it's just a bunch of dumb mystery shit. It's a bunch of setup for a bunch of nonsense, including the concept of the Enclave apparently has a space satellite under their control that they've been using to relay telecommunications, which is fucking insane. Just absolute nonsense. Yes, of course. Okay. It's not like one of those was a big plot point in the original story or anything. Fucking heck. And there's also just like a bunch of other setup things, like Black Pony Mountain, that weird mountain that's all made of like hexagonal rock, has like a weird signal coming out of it, and they can't figure out why, which is just set up for something that happens later. And that's the only reason why I'm bringing it up.
I'd kind of want to see a bunch of like completely otherwise inconsequential to the story, incomprehensibly weird adventuring parties doing their own shit around the set.
Yeah, there's just like there's off in the distance like a bison and a robo dog and a and like a pair of twins and stuff like that, just having fun adventures. He's just a pony code of the Scooby gang solving mysteries. No, instead, Blackjack wakes up to the sight of Lighthooves showing up because he hasn't been in the story for a long time. She goes to shoot him, and he's like, wait, don't shoot me. I saved Glory's life. Like, you owe me at least that. You owe me at least the opportunity to speak. And she's like, yeah, I'm dumb, so I guess I'll let you do this instead of just shooting you in the head as many times as I can. He is now wearing, like, very pristine white armor now, as opposed to, like, the Enclave's, like, jet black armor. For you see, Blackjack now has black armored legs because contrast. And that would be almost an interesting symbolism if Somber didn't fucking call it out by Blackjack saying, huh, those white legs are familiar for some reason. Another instance of Somber just absolutely ruining any opportunity for people to think for themselves. We learn a bunch of dumb shit in rapid succession. Apparently Lighthooves and Chicanery are brothers. Lighthooves' real name is Ledger Domain. He rambles his nonsense bad guy plot about how he just loves his country too much. He loves his city so much that he would do anything to protect it. And don't you understand? We're not so different, you and I, is essentially what he's selling Blackjack. BJ tries to, like, sort of limply, like... This is actually, like, a really weird, like, reminiscent flashback to that instance where, like, Blackjack and Dawn are discussing their, like, ethos, and Dawn keeps bringing up her, like, points about, like, oh, we'll save the waste from itself, and Blackjack weirdly keeps handily knocking down all of them with, like, really sensible...
Yeah, that was conclusion. An aberration. We're back to normal.
Blackjack
has no answer for...
Yeah, this is the shitty version of that, where she keeps bringing up points that Lighthooves just easily beats by just being like, nah. It basically boils down to like, well, you don't understand how the Enclave works, Blackjack, so there's no way you can understand why this is important. And it's like, yeah, because... Which, I mean, like, the response really to that be like, yeah, because this isn't my story and I shouldn't be here. This is somebody else's story.
But that somebody else isn't giving any... isn't allowed to have any time, screen time.
Yes.
So, I guess I'm here.
I'll be her proxy for now. This is a thing that me and Somber fucking... Me and Weird came to a conclusion about on the Discord, and it's relevant now. This is also, like, a really weird scene, because Blackjack is, like, talking with him, and basically, like, Lighthooves is like, well, if you're going to be, like, a rogue... Because, like, he wants her to join him to save Thunderhead from everything that's happening. So he's like, well, if you're not going to join me, I guess I'll just kill you. And then just, like, effortlessly kicks her ass. Like, just absolutely stomps her into the ground. Like the most, like, fucking squashed I've ever seen Blackjack get outside of the leg end. Like, she's trounced so effortlessly, he doesn't even break a sweat. Like, he just absolutely ruins her. And, like...
What?
Is he
full of combat drugs? Is he, like, wearing a super extra, like... Is he wearing power armor with a nuclear reactor in it?
He's always been able to do this, apparently.
He has laser eyes? What the...
No, like, he's just apparently always been able to do this. He's always just been a better fighter than her in every way. And she's never had a chance, no matter what. And, like... Well, because, like, we've never... Because like, it sets up. We've never seen these two fight. So the reality of it is that Lighthooves has always been able to easily trounce her. And this brings up a really weird recurring theme within Project Horizons. Really obvious overt sexism. So Blackjack is literally incapable of defeating a man. Ever. We ran the tapes, we went through the entire story, and realized that there has never been an instance where Blackjack has ever beaten a dude.
Even her biggest, like, win against like the first book's main antagonist, Deus, it was 21's bomb.
Yes.
That did it.
The Legate easily beat her. Light Hooves apparently easily beats her. Steel Rain's power armor was too strong for her sword to go through and easily trounce her both times that he fights her. Because the first time, he just hits her with a fucking artillery shot and takes her out in 1 second.
Oh, wait a minute. Who was it that created the EMP that took him out in the
Lancer.
Second fight? A dude! A dude had intervened. And, like, the
oh, no,
most
that was
terrifying...
Watcher that did that, but yeah. Right, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's a different dude.
A legacy dude, no less.
Yes.
And the most terrifying part, the most gut-wrenching part, not even the scrubs, not even the putty patrollers. Even the putty patrollers got to have their revenge and one-upper in the end.
Yeah, because...
With the big gang rape scene.
Yeah, because a bunch of the like almost all of the participants of the big gang rape scene were the various gangs and factions that Blackjack had fucked over in one way or another, so they decided to do in kind. And so yeah, it's one of those things where like it's one of those things people could easily decry us as reading too much into, but I definitely think it's a very, very relevant trend that there is a very strong sexist tone to Blackjack constantly losing, which like the
not even fucking Sanguine, who was yeah. like booked as incredibly personally weak, like she wasn't even the one who in any way physically or otherwise defeated Sanguine. Sanguine like gave up, like it was the machinations of fate that ultimately defeated Sanguine. To the best of my memory, the only combatants she has ever taken down were other women, other female.
Yeah, because the really standout one that really sticks that sort of really let me notice this trend from the first hand was Big Daddy of all people, because Big Daddy is like a weird fucking old man. He's just a dirty old man who runs a raider group, and he is somehow still cartoonishly strong despite how old he is, and easily kicks Blackjack through a goal, like through a football goal. Like, it's fucking ridiculous. He judo throws her, but whatever. It doesn't matter. The specifics of it don't matter. He just does it effortlessly. She is a ragdoll whenever men show up. It is weird and persistent, and like my only guess to like why that is the case is it's a subconscious proxy thing again. Like it's the thing I always say about Blackjack. Blackjack is like an effigy of Little Pip that Sombra is beating up. Like it's essentially just the entirety of the story is like he made his version of Little Pip and beats her up and then says and then like looks to the audience and goes, "See, this is why Little Pip is such a lame character. You see how this is transferable? It's all sympathetic." A magic she like in a realistic story, Little Pip would be beaten by every dude she ever fights. You see this? You see how Blackjack is so weak against it? It's fucking
yeah,
ridiculous.
It's schizophrenic. Like she oscillates between punching bag when he can like be in the feet of his villain XP to like when he is speaking through his proxy. Of all of his incredibly spicy, fascistic hot takes, then he can have the satisfaction of beating up Little Pip. But if Blackjack is finding a woman, then he can like show how badass his badass OC is.
Yes.
By kicking the shit out of some woman. Out of some woman who dared to pretend at being powerful.
Yes.
Which is all the more evidence that the last time this like conversation with a villain happened, it was definitely somebody else who wrote it.
Yes.
Because he had to punish that character, that a femoid being put over too much by having Blackjack stomp on them.
Yeah, squash her harder than ever before. Fuck, we still got a lot to get through. It's gonna be a long episode.
Yep. That's
anyways, Blackjack...
Tom, carry on!
Yeah, Blackjack narrowly avoids being beaten to death, canceling the cloud walking spell on her so she just falls to the floor, which admittedly is pretty clever, but like why it's happening is really grotesque.
And like I'm thrown by like he doesn't even bother to explain it. Like he doesn't bother to explain how like the right hand of death, who is a living tank, and usually booked as having a supernatural capacity to kill anyone.
Why this dude is
giving her trouble?
Yeah, she just suddenly made a tissue paper. She falls to the floor. She's saved by a rando who, oh man, this whole section, this thing is real ridiculous. But she gets saved by like a random, just friendly ho-dunk Nazi who's like, oh, well, I help people. That's what ponies do. Which really just really grossed me out in the moment. But she doesn't believe any of Blackjack's stories and just thinks it's like a weird domestic abuse case. Which, you know, again, paradise, but still has weird domestic abuse cases. That's a weird thing to put in.
As a normal assumed part of life.
This is the way things ought to be. Don't forget that. Don't forget that was how this chapter started. There's also like a really weird line that really stuck out to me where this random helping her is like, oh, you know, males can be like that. And she comes clean on her actual identity.
Holy shit.
And she also says, like, I don't even, like, I don't have a boyfriend because I'm gay. And I went, like, that was a record scratch moment for me. It's like, wait a minute. What do you mean? Like, you fuck dudes all the time. Like, you're not, like, aren't you supposed to be kind of bi? Like, what the fuck is this? Like, you're not, like, this character, like, Blackjack has never been a hard lesbian in any capacity. So why should she use this as a, like, statement about this? The very dark implication of it is that, like, she still sees men as being subhuman and couldn't even conceive being in a relationship with a dude, even in an offhand way still. Which, you know, that's real solid character growth there, Somber. But it just really stuck out to me. It was really fucking
absolved weird. Of all sin.
Yes. Absolved of all sins.
Crucified to by herself to herself.
Yep. For all of this. They finally manage to get away. She gets to the university they were planning on going to meet up with Glory's old teacher who can help them out because he's important within the society. So they go in there and it's all this big university and they meet back up with Glory and everything's well. BJ explains the situation with Light Hooves and it doesn't really matter. They get into Morningstar, that's his name, Dr. Morningstar. Morningstar's little botanical area that has it's which they're surprised initially because it's covered in Killing Joke, the like stuff that turns you into different stuff. Because apparently like Morningstar has been testing on those because he's trying to figure out how those work. And like so everyone else in this, to make myself feel better about this chapter, I've been imagining everybody with, like, comical movie Nazi accents, because it's a lot funnier, and it's a lot easier to swallow.
Even though they all have buzzing drawls.
Yeah, because, like, they're all meant to be, like, the Confederacy. They're meant to be, like, highfalutin, upper-class Southern people, not the dirt farmers. Not the plantation.
Not a small-handed labor of the land.
Collectively, the enclave is supposed to be sitting on a rocking chair with a mint julep in an all-white suit. You know, looking over an army of slaves. But don't worry about it. But like Morningstar really stuck out to me because his speaking pattern reminded me of my co-host Weird's like Zizek impression. Cause he's just the noise really like came through in the character, and that made me laugh a lot when I read it through.
See, the pony animation are pure ideology.
Exactly. I'm so glad he's doing experiments. They managed to convince them the power of. BJ like knows how some of the like the stuff that the botanical their botanical bio research is working on works because of the memory orb stuff that she's done, so they like trade secrets for potential help. The only other relevant thing about this, because it'll come up later, is that they make a joke about a dude who got hit by Killing Joke, and his dumb Killing Joke related power is because he used to say fuck me all the time. He's now like become impossibly irresistible to everybody around him, and they have to lock him in isolation until it wears off, which I just thought was kind of comical, because it's the, like, careful what you wish for kind of thing. You poorly worded your wish. Cool. And at the last second, they get back to the estate, where they find out that the council member they're going to meet has been murdered because Dawn is there, I guess. Yay! Even though it's apparently...
All right.
This is important. It's supposed to be impossible to break into Thunderhead. Even a single body would be hard pressed to get into the Thunderhead undetected, because they'd be shot down by the lightning rods, especially when it's mostly made of metal and robotics like Dawn is. So how the fuck is she here?
I mean, same way our protagonists are. I don't know.
it's just like
in a better written story, I would assume this is foreshadowing for like setting up that like the protagonist only got through because Dawn's Harbingers somehow shut down the detection grid.
Yeah,
like we were expecting to be shot down by now. Like we were planning to come up with a plan off the seat of our ass, but we just got through for some reason. And this is where it pays off. It was shut down ahead of them by Dawn. But I guess that's just headcanon for the fans to like invent for themselves. Because fucking anyway.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the end of the chapter. As Dawn's here and BJ makes a like. A really weird line about how she's brought the wasteland with her, and her presence has corrupted Eden.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God damn it.
No. What? This would have happened. She didn't.
Did Somber forget to write the part where they, like, where we had a chapter before this where they went on an adventure to shut down the detection grid? Then that would make sense.
Yeah.
Then if the party was the ones who like shut down the detection grid so they could get through, then she could bemoan that in doing this to get in herself, she opened the door to other malign outside influences.
Yeah.
Once again, the Nazi propaganda is 1000% true.
Yeah, I think this is just meant to be like a dumb thematic thing that like her presence has corrupted Eden, and that's where she went wrong. Is
it's being not here how first. It works, though. It's not how storytelling works. Fine, make him stop. He's doing it wrong.
God,
make him stop hurting stories.
he's damaging the concept of stories by being so bad at them. Oh man, like. I think I wouldn't mock this stuff so much if it wasn't that like I knew that Somber was like firmly up his own ass when it comes to writing, like firmly up his own ass, like absolutely that writer, like the one who just like really just thinks that like their shit is all like really clever and insightful and complex and thematic and interesting and like not just fucking like. Lower than Harlequin romance garbage that belongs in a bin, like.
You know, they say a writer who puts out more than they read is a hack, but I've published 7 novels this year and haven't read in a decade.
But fuck, that's the end of our chapter. So weird. Is there anything better we could be reading instead of this?
You could be listening to the French synth duo. Justice.
Okay.
Because their song Stress has been playing in my head while I drift away from this story and imagine Rampage's literal rampage through Confederate Nazi suburbia.
Yeah, well, I mean it's a nice hat trick to polish off her and 21's stint of leading a proletariat revolution.
So leading insurrections in places that need them while the protagonist is fucking around like chilling herself to the tyranny.
Yes. That's our headcanon for why 21 and Rampage aren't in the story anymore is because
21 is hooked up with resistance groups that have been active for 150 years in this hellhole, and is making bombs. So he's teaching them to make make better bombs.
Yes.
With the materials they've got, using his wastelander, like hard-earned wastelander smarts. And Rampage is doing a more just form of the classic 90s slasher film, where he's killing the fucking principal members of the HOA committee.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. It's good stuff. That's the kind of stuff that keeps me going through this podcast. It sure ain't the text.
You're welcome. And if you out there want to thank me, you can send us some mail that we can answer on air. You can send it to weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. I also have a Ko-fi you can look up under that same email handle. Some lean months. You can contact us through Twitter. I'm trying to focus on being more fun on Twitter instead of just being real mad at the libs who want us all dead. And Fi, meanwhile, is very horny on Maine.
Yes,
his Maine extremely horned.
It's my whole. It's my
so
whole.
You've been warned.
Like, yep, I've been drawing a lot of big titty furries recently. That's been what I do for my living.
In case you weren't aware, minor bit of trivia. He is Fi because the first part.
Oh,
of...
Oh no! We can't explain my name for a couple of chapters. We got.
Oh fuck!
Because it's relevant. It comes up in the up in the text.
All right.
So we'll explain my name when that comes up. Stay tuned for that.
There's probably been a warping sound or something to censor the forbidden information. That I've just presented, but yeah, contact us through those two handles. I really don't think any of you have the courage or will to send us an email, and you definitely don't have the strength of conviction. I certainly would have pie on my face. I would be the boo-boo fool if you were somehow able to give us reviews and stars on any service you're listening to.
Yeah, the reviews are probably the most important because those are the things that actually push the algorithm towards, like, recommending us to other people. And, like, I mean, this is a fun project we just do for funsies, but it would be nice to get more recognition. Every once in a while I find out that there's new people that listen to this podcast from friends of friends, and that's always makes me happy. I like the idea of spreading the good word about bad fiction and sort of like how to avoid it. And atrocity tourism is always a hoot, but, yeah, so give us reviews, our preference, but if you have nothing worth saying, that's fine too. Or you feel like there's nothing you have worth saying, that's fine too. And you can just give us stars and likes and thumbs ups and pod ups. I don't know what different podcatchers do.
All that said, Fi, I'm really grateful for you for assuring me that Somber didn't forget. It is canon after all that Rampage is going on a killing spree.
Yes.
In suburban Hooftwafia. Otherwise, this all of this probably have been a terrible mistake.
From home in the dark.